Yes. Save your day, I wanna be up here. I wish he's a diva. I'm the same man, I wanna meet him here. They say she know that I know that it's just a rope and I wanna leave it. They say she needs to slow down. The man is sitting around now. See nothing. Girl you've ever seen before, nothing you can imagine in the world. I'm trying to find the words to describe this girl. Yes. If you get there, you wanna be up here. Oh, she's a diva, diva. I feel the same when I wanna meet her, meet her. They say she know I got out. So when I wanna leave, I leave her. They say she was a slow down. They say she was a slow down. She's nothing like a girl you've ever seen before. You can't compare to your neighbor. I'm trying to find the words to describe this girl. The way I'm being is mistaken. The way that booty moving, I can't take no more. I can stop what I'm doing so I can move. I'm trying to find the words to describe this girl. The way I'm being is
You got to pump it up. Don't you know, pump it up. You got to pump it up. Don't you know, pump it up. You got to pump it up. Don't you know, pump it up. You got to pump it up. Don't you know, pump it up. You got to pump it up. Don't you know, pump it up. Yes, we're back on here. I'm not sure if we are pumping it up this Easter Sunday. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Really appreciate it. I'm actually surprised that we've got quite a number of people here, even though today is Easter Sunday. I'm just presuming most people are with their families and yeah, we've got some of the boys boiling in the club and stuff. I've got my friends at the beach and all of that. But Charlie, if you guys, you've just make it a decision to join us here, right here on the spaces, then big shout out to everybody right here. Really, really, really appreciate. Today is big. Today is huge because, we're talking money, you know, we're talking fans. We're talking about how we can raise, fans. You know, how we can attract, investors in Web3 specifically. You know, there are a lot of people that are trying to raise funds for events, for projects. There are so many type of projects. We'll be discussing, all of that. We've got, amazing, amazing, amazing speakers, that will be joining us, today, tonight, actually. But before that, we'll also be looking into the market, what is trending, what people are talking about, just a couple of some stories that have been trending on the TL. And so, yeah, but I want everyone to repost this spaces. Please share the space, just repost it. Be reminded that we are also live on Binance Square at Entamoti on Binance. Hey, if you're on Binance and you are listening to us, big shout outs to you. We do this each and every single Sunday, 8 p.m. UTC. So yeah, please share, repost the spaces, share the link so that your friends and, you know, your acquaintances and other people you've been interacting with here on X, they can also, tune in. We're just going to take a breather whilst I try to get some of, my speakers up here. Let's just take like a minute. And then we'll be right back. Okay. Thank you so much for reposting the spaces. Mr. Echo Real, my brother, how are you doing? Are we pumping it up?
GM. We are pumping. Hey, I mean, it's pumping, but certainly not so much enjoyment like unlike previously. But hey, as far as we are pumping, as far as the market is pumping, then we all feel pumped up, isn't it?
So when the market is, are we pumping? I don't think we are pumping, is it?
I mean, some portfolio we used to hold and, but, we sold quite recently, it was pumping. I mean, it's not a good feeling. It's like on your face, baby, that kind of feeling.
Yeah. Right. Blackman, how are you doing, my brother?
Yeah, Jim, good evening. I'm doing well. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right. I think I had a fruitful day. It's been Easter, but I don't think I really enjoyed this Easter. I don't know. It just came pretty much fast. Yeah.
You think the Easter came so much faster?
Yeah. Just even after tomorrow, Easter is over. Like, yeah. But, you know, the market is, you know, right now, I don't think we are going, you know, up. We are in kind of like a consolidation phase, decision. We are going to be seeing a lot of fake outs and stuff. Yeah, people are going to get swept out. Yeah, but I mean, regardless, this year is a really weird, but I mean, for the truth is people who are doing, what's it called? Futures and leverage and stuff. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of liquidity sweeps because right now, I don't know, but the liquidity is so thin. And when liquidity is thin and the order book, you know, all these things, it's pretty much bad on the market. But, you know, we hold on to it. So we have to see.
Yeah.
If we don't see the fake outs and stuff, then maybe we move in the right direction. But for now, it's just a consolidation phase.
I think the political, the geopolitical tension is also, part of all these. But yeah, I'm seeing my brother, PJ. My brother PJ is also here. Joe, are you in a position to speak? How are you doing? How's your Easter going?
Hey, bro, I am good. Yeah, I'm in a position to speak. Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. We are happy to have you. And I'm pretty much sure that in the next session, we're definitely going to delve into the fundraising with the playbook and all of that. Mr. Seth of Hopium, how is it going, my brother?
Yeah, Antolotti, good evening, everyone. We hope on, and yeah, pretty simple for you. We hope on. Yeah.
How's it going at Hopium?
Everything is good. We are still preparing for a big day out there, and in fact, we are meeting new innovative ways of doing things better, faster, and more secure. So it's like there's never been a dull moment on the team and on the project. So we are getting better by day. We are,
of course,
able to add new guys on the team and on the community every day. So yeah, the good thing is we are hoping on, and hope is the name that is coming. Hope will be born. Yeah.
That's okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Emeka is also, with us. Mr. Emeka, how is your Easter Sunday going?
Thank you for having me. I think it's just going on chill. Watching the news, not much, just following, what's going on with the world and, just being chilled. And being happy that the Christians globally are celebrating that he's risen. Yeah. So I think that's the posture of my Easter evening. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Baker, I think during in the next 20 minutes of our session, you would want to check the sound very well. I think I had a little issue hearing. So yeah, I think it's about just positioning. So All right, Aquario, I'm going to start with you. Where do you think the market is going? It looks like people are talking about Tuesday. We all saw the tweet. It was not even a tweet. The bizarre post of President Trump on Truth Social. I even saw you posted it on your status. I shared with your community also. Where do you think this can send the market to, Corio?
I hate to say that it doesn't take, I mean, unfortunately, that it doesn't take the president seriously anymore, all right? And this kind of news should have sent Bitcoin way down to 50K, all right? And kind of, you see BTC now is pretty much stable, consolidated around 66, 67, 65. So I don't think the market is paying much attention to the rhetoric and the actions anymore. And I'm yet to basically understand, I mean, I want to understand if the risk appetite of consumers or traders or investments has changed or has pretty much gone up, because it seems we are in a very turbulent, uncertain moment, but what is happening in the market should have been worse. Also, to see price of BTC like this, pretty much can tell, I mean, it tells that there is some kind of there's this kind of risk investment in BTC, because BTC pretty much is a risk or high risk investment area. All right, so to see BTC at this price still means the risk appetite of traders or investors is still high or pretty much moderate. So I don't see the tweet and the rhetoric and the beefed up of all whatever is happening between US and other parts of whatever has happened between US, Israel and Iran is going to have any special effect on the market. What is happening is happening. I mean, basically, kisara, whatever will be. And the market is not really paying attention or unfortunately respecting the rhetoric of the president, any longer or anymore.
When he said special effect, I'm like, okay. Anyway, but, I personally believe if it escalates, it's still going to have an adverse effect. Black man, what do you think?
I mean, it's up to us and the kind of power play that are at hand, especially with our market makers. If the market makers decide that because Trump said this and because of the geopolitics that is happening, they want to, you know, be on the side of Trump or, you know, protect their liquidity. Because right now, liquidity is very thin. So the little you have to make sure that you protect it very well. So based on that, if they decide that because of what Trump is saying, they are scared, you know, they fear they might lose their money and they decide to sell, you are going to be seeing the cascade effect, just like it happened with the crash that we faced, I think the 19 billion liquidity sweep in the ecosystem. We might see that if the market makers decide to sell or FOMO sell, because basically what is happening. But on the longer side, what Iran is also trying to do, trying to push the dollar market away and to use other forms of fiat currencies or monetary policies for payment or for global payment. I think if they are able to proceed or succeed with it, it will not have any effect on the market, because just like they are trying to do with the euro, I think they had a meeting with the European Union where they would allow them to sell oil through the Stratos or whatever, and they will accept their euro currency. If that should happen, it's going to have a huge drawdown on the American, on the American market, not the crypto market, because Iran is very open to Bitcoin. And now that they are facing crisis on their currency, which is a fiat currency, they are no longer using it for payments because it's of no use. So most of them rely on Bitcoin. And I think it's even at a point where their electricity cap for mining Bitcoin is very low. So anybody can mine Bitcoin literally, but, you know, some other factors are play. But yeah, if they are able to proceed with this, I don't think it's going to have so much effect on the market. But if it backfires or it doesn't go in the right direction, then it's pretty much going to have some effect, though it may not be as efficient as it always used to be, especially when Trump gives news. But yeah, it would have a little effect on the market, especially since, you know, right now we are still in a fake out zone. Prices are still consolidating and our liquidity is very thin. If you check the order book, you see that liquidity in crypto, even if you check the global market cap of crypto, you see that it has really drawn down. I think we were about 4 trillion and now if you check the global market cap of cryptocurrencies, it's about $2 trillion or $3 trillion. So the liquidity is very thin. And if we don't hold our bags or we decide to go with, you know, whatever news that comes up, we'll all feel it at the long run or in the long run.
Interesting take. Guys, if you have a submission and you're in the, you're part of the audience, you can leave that at the comment section and I will gladly, just be a part of the whole conversation. We already have over 120 people tuned in on Binance. Please, if you are listening from Binance and you have any comments as well, you can drop it at the chat, so that, we can also, look at it. Right. There's a, this interesting story that I wouldn't say is, it came so surprising to me, but it's being on CT. I saw CZ retweet it. I personally quoted and tweet about it. There are people talking about it. And I'm sure some of you have already heard it. Nigeria leads the world in stablecoin ownership and adoption with 59% of crypto users holding USDT and 48% holding USDC. This is insane, guys. This is absolutely insane. And this, this revelation, as I'm calling it, because I mean, I knew Nigeria had like a lot of stables. They use a lot of stable coins and stuff like that, but I did not see it like this, you know, to lead the likes of the USA, India, bro. Let's look at the population of India. The population of India, like, is absolutely crazy. Aquari, what do you make of this? And how do you think this has kind of even changed how, some of the people in the West see this emerging market like Africa in this space?
Nigeria always has been an interesting market, an interesting place, of course, you know. One is youthful and very active and innovative country, right? It's like it's a place that don't wait for the government to make things happen, right? They make things happen anyway, regardless of what the governments choose to do and not to do, right? And another thing that I can also say is that if you see countries like India and these countries, they have serious grip. They have the technology and everything to have that serious grip on the pretty much to understand who is holding what. So if they threaten that if you do this, this is going to happen to you, they have the tools or they have the technology to supervise or to monitor those holding this. And I don't think Nigeria governments have that tool yet. Okay, so even if they threaten that, hey, don't do that, still people can do it, and I mean there will be less of consequences. And you know, you remember when Nigerian government banned crypto in Nigeria? What happened? Nigeria became second or third, right? So it's a serious, daring, youthful country. And when you have a population that is very youthful, active and innovative like this, the energy is high and you can't contain it. Even if they do have the technology to contain it, there will be another way to, make hold of it. It's like everybody is trying to make it and no one is waiting for the government to make things happen. And that drives competition, that drives innovation.
Yeah.
And remember when we went to Dubai, you realize that even beyond the fact that they want to make it in their country, they just want to go global, right? And it's exciting, but basically Nigeria is Nigeria, and the more they will always find ways to be on top. And it's good news. It's a good representation of the continent. When I saw that news, I was super, super excited. And that also makes the country very, very attractive. Nigeria is not a place to downplay. If you want to live, if you want to tap into the African market,
yeah,
definitely you have attention to the country. So it's a good news.
Thank you so much, Akol. Let me ask the people that are actually operating in Nigeria. I mean, PJ, you guys have been moving around stable coins, and how do you think that this news is affecting how people perceive the whole informal sector of crypto adoption in Africa?
So first of all, I think like Nigeria has like a high adoptance of stablecoin, especially USDT. But I also think some of that data is like misrepresented or is not like read right. For example, last year Nigeria did move about 90 billion in stablecoins, but saying like, so I think the issue is like what chain analysis put out, like as the data and the data that is on the ground is entirely different. So a lot of importers and exporters do use USDT for transfer, but a lot of this is like not properly monitored and there are no like proper channels to actually see where all of this volume goes, which is why like these new regulations that are coming are quite helpful. I do know, yes, Nigeria is probably in the top 5 users of stablecoins, but number one, I think that data is very misrepresented. If you also see like some of the other like startups that actually use data and do not want to mispresent the data, do not actually jump on that statistic. And if you also see most of that data is being reported by people that don't do business in Nigeria, have not done business in Nigeria, or have no idea how like the Nigerian market work as a whole. So like when you see data like that, usually take it like with a grain of salt. Also like when you see the people that are actually pushing data like that, most of them are not really honest actors. So there's also that.
Wow. That's quite an interesting take. Emeka, do you agree? Do you agree with PJ with the data being misrepresented?
Yes, 100%. As a founder, as someone who is involved in the market in different states, the data is not fully, is on the surface level. There's no, and the problem with it, the news doesn't really break the data down in a way whereby we understand the micro and the macro systems, you know, pushing this data out. And for me, there's nothing to celebrate about 50-something percent of Nigerians having USDT. It just shows that there is a poor system in Africa where we have accepted dollarization as an acceptable growth indication. Now, what does USDT mean? A one-to-one of dollar. It's dollar taking over the micro system in the crypto space. And, you know, we have our local stable coins like CNGN. They are the ones who we need to win so we can export our currency to the global market. Now, with the dollars is imported, there is no way pushing it out because it has conquered the market and people are celebrating it, but they are not looking at the big picture that we've lost the market. And there is nothing to celebrate about. It's just, the people who should be celebrating this is Theta and the US market. You know, this is a win for them that African, the biggest black continent, is being won by the US dollar in stablecoin market share. So when people celebrate it, when CZ tweet it, they are winning. It's a glory celebration for them. It's nothing glorious for me to celebrate. Yes, I might make few bucks for it, which is not a collective growth. At the end of the day, the per capita growth is still low. The poverty rate is still pumping up. So generally, yes, the USA, if you find out a lot of white folks are tweeting it because, yeah, they are winning. They will use it easily to penetrate the market.
Yeah, is it not a step in the right direction? Because at the end of the day,
let me finish. Okay, so the problem is that what we think is a step in the right direction to us is because we're not even thinking how deep this is, you know, how bad this is. You know, it's just like, just imagine that US, tomorrow, digital currency, which is Bitcoin or others, become the gateway for the global world to make purchases. What will happen to our local fiat? If everyone in Nigeria start holding USDT, what will happen to Ghana cities? What will happen to Nigerian Naira? What will happen to Kenya? You know, what would happen to our local currency? So how is this centralized currency? Because forget, Theta, USDC, they are not fully decentralized. They are still centralized currency. Bitcoin might be decentralized, but these currencies are still 100% owned by USA entity or USA, you know, image. And at the end of the day, what right direction are you talking about, please? Thank you.
Right. I get it, but
I want to know, right?
No, but you know, sometimes, guys, I know our time is up with the market trends, but let me just, you know, sometimes people that see this as an entry point of crypto, and I mean, of course, yes, we are also trying to push for our local stable coins and stuff like that, but don't also forget that there are a lot of issues with volatility of some of these. For example, like the CNGN, I mean, we all know the issue with the Naira. And even if, Kenya or a country like Ghana and stuff like that also coming up with stable coins, I mean, that's fine. But what I'm trying to say with the step in the right direction is, at the end of the day, so when these people still get into the space, which still also push for adoption, then they will also see the other options that they have. So, I mean, they come on in, because these guys, some of them are still holding dollars in banks. Like, we have people that are opening dollar accounts and stuff like that. So when they come on here and they see, okay, so you have USDT, we have USDC, then we also have CNGN, where people, we know that, okay, we could also, hold that with the local currency and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, as someone who is starting up or now getting in, they really need to know how the dynamics really work. Because at the end of the day, if the local currency also has a good strength, like the volatility is not that crazy, then the people will also have great confidence, you know, in holding it. Which, of course, I also advocate for that anyway. Akori wanted to say something.
Yeah, I think
wanted to know if the report was based on in transactions or holding us in sitting duck. If it's transaction, probably I thought would be because of the interaction between interaction across different chains, people investing in different projects outside and bringing liquidity back in Nigeria and all that. Because if someone have, let's say, 2K to buy a certain coin and it makes about, let's say, 8K, the money comes. So I wanted to know if it was based on transactions or was just that people selling basically people buying USDT and holding as a hedge against possible inflation or anything.
Yeah, I think it was more of ownership. But we would delve more into this probably next week on some of the discussion. Anyways, guys, so yeah, let's just quickly get into the main bone of contention for today. Mr. Obinna, I've actually been trying to bring you up. I've actually invited you several times, so you kindly have to check, or if you can also try and request. Yeah. Because I've invited you several times, actually. Mr. Obinna is part of our speakers today. We're looking at the fundraising. Mr. Emeka is here. Paul is here. Seth of Hopium is also here, and we're definitely gonna delve into that. So we're diving into one of the most important conversations that is shaping the future of innovation. We're talking fundraising in Web3, especially with emerging markets, just like our market, Africa, of course. We all know for years, access to capital has been one of the biggest barriers for builders, for founders, and, you know, people that are starting up new projects, right? I mean, traditional fundraising has often been more limited to exclusivity, you know, heavily biased and stuff like that. But we all know that Web3 is really looking at a whole new narrative, and that's what we're gonna talk about. Mr. Seth, I'm gonna start with you. How difficult do you think it is as an African founder yourself in raising fund? What was your struggle before you were able to raise, I don't know, maybe your first round or something like that?
Well, how difficult it is? Very difficult. It's almost impossible. If difficult cannot qualify it, it is almost impossible to raise in Africa, especially in West Africa. I know we might have some founders in the audience and some up here who might say otherwise, but if we are being honest with ourselves, like, it is almost impossible to raise in Africa. But then, one thing that makes us win at the end of the day is you take your time to build the connections. Because this is money. No, even though it is crypto, it is money you are dealing with. And the key
thing that gives you this thing, this commodity or this money is trust. So we can see that in the market is not very fair in terms of access to funding, because the network, they have the connections, they have ways to make it work, they have ways to suck out profit from every token, every project that comes out there. So they continue to rule the market. So answering the first question, I'll say it is almost impossible, but when it comes to success stories, it has all been based on the network that we're able to develop. Not that people don't believe in your vision, not that, from my personal experience, it is not that I'm not building something that is good. Competitively, I can say that most of the African projects have a very good utility. We know what we are dealing with because we have a market that we can directly shape to. Unlike other places, they are just building and innovating, and like they are just causing FOMO based on speculation. In Africa, we have real problems that we are solving because the problems are on the ground, right? So it is the network that makes us succeed on certain fronts. And we hope that the fundraising space can be dynamic to receive utility and receive good projects with time. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Mr. Obinna, how are you doing? Sorry for the earlier coming up. How's your Easter going though?
Yeah. My Easter has been going very well. A slow but steady day, and it's almost rounding off. So yeah, it's been a good one. We are grateful. You know, Christ is risen. We all are risen. Hope our coins will also rise alongside.
Amen.
I like that one. Anyway, thank you very much for joining us today. So let me, once you are here, let me just ask you, from your own experience, right? What do you think make fundraising in Web3 fundamentally different from traditional startup funding, especially in Africa?
Okay, so fundraising in Web3 is totally different from what you see in other sectors, you know, of the world, and even in tech also. I think that in the early days of Web3, the VCs used the general playbook, you know, of fundraising for, you know, tech projects, and also they got caught up in the hype. I mean, the VCs, they understand the game. It's a system, right? And they were always willing to place their bets on it. And of course, there was that race to be early, to be quick, and majority of them played the game. It paid up for largely most of them, but as the industry began to settle and mature, the game changed, you know. So the playbook was not what it used to be. It wasn't working as it used to, and they began to really see the dynamics of the industry, and it became obvious that Web3 is like no other industry, and it's a technology whose time has come but hasn't also been well understood by a lot of the people who play in it, both on the builder side and the investor's side. I think that if you look at it right now, on a general term, you would hardly find any investor right now who would be quickly to jump on token allocation, unlike what you would find in the past 5, 4, 3 years ago, right? That's also changing. And then most of the innovations too is not really solving any problem per se, you know. They are just assumptions. And that is the truth of the matter. We have very little innovation solving real problems. Then if you come to Africa, the challenge with Africa is that Africans haven't actually cracked the code of what this technology can do for Africa in general. And that itself has also become a challenge, right? I mean, the payment problem exists, but we are also kind of entering the same trap that fintech is in Africa currently. Everybody is solving a payment problem and nobody seems to have solved the payment problem. So you see every new fintech innovation, every new fintech company is coming to make your payment faster, as though the other one didn't make your payment faster. Every new person is coming to solve payment for you, but that's what the other one you just onboarded did.
Yeah.
You know, and it seems like nobody has been able to crack that, right? And that leaves a lot of the solutions that this technology could be used to provide for Africa on the table, untouched, you know, and we are all just circling around the same solution.
Yeah.
And yet nobody has been able to crack it. I mean, you know, one of the greatest frustrations I have faced is when I'm in Accra, I have at least 3 Nigerian banks that operate in Accra, right? I mean, I have a UBA, I have a GT, which other bank again, but of course UBA and GT, but I can't even use my card on a UBA ATM, my UBA account in Nigeria. I can't use it in Ghana, you know, but with crypto, I can do that. Right. Now, if I'm going to solve a payment solution for crypto between Nigeria and Ghana, what becomes the main focus now is what is the size of the intra-trade between Nigeria and Ghana to make this a viable solution that I can pitch to a VC to help me scale and they can see a pathway of exit, because when you're talking to VC, VC is not your father. They are looking at what is the exit for me as an investor. They are looking for the exit and how many X they are exiting with, you know. So majority of people who are building in Africa seem to be building the same solutions. And VCs have heard about these same solutions before. And they have invested in the ones who came in early. And they have exited very few. A market becomes very attractive by the number of successful exits it has recorded.
Yeah. Okay, so Bina, I think as we're moving on, we're definitely going to delve into some of all of those as well. But I mean, yeah, I really, really appreciate the submission that's coming in. I think Dami just joined us. Dami, how's it going? Dami is actually the West Africa lead for Base, and he has been in this space for quite a while. Dami, we're happy to have you. How are you doing, my brother? How's your Easter going?
Yo, Chief, it's going well. I'm so happy to actually be here. I was also listening to Obina speak, and it was nice to hear everything he was saying. Happy to be here, Chief. Thanks for the
invite. Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us once again. Mr. Emeka, I think you have had a lot of experience with VCs and, you know, trying to get people to raise and all of that. I want to ask a simple question. At which point do you think a founder or a builder can confidently say that it is time for me to raise? Like, at which point would you advise a founder to raise? Oh, I think he just dropped. Okay, let me, Aquario, you also just dropped. Okay, let me try and bring Emeka up here once again.
Lost you for a while. Can you repeat the question?
Yes. So, what I was saying is, with your background with VCs and all of that, at which point would you advise a builder or a founder to raise funds? Like, at which point of their building journey would you say that this is it? You are ready to raise, or you're ready to talk to VCs?
Okay, great. I think that's a very legit question, because the dynamics have changed. The VCs these days want to see like some proof of work, some market intelligence. I always say this to people, you know, who are interested to hear that VCs are also like students who wants to understand your markets, like the emerging market. They want to also learn. So they also look out for founders they believe that could actually help them understand the emerging market properly. So you are not just, they are not just investing in you. They are also seeking a partner in the market. So I used to tell people that these days, before you go to a VC to ask fund, you've been working in the market, right? You've been investing in the market. You've been working, like, you should be able to, you know, use your own resources to get the product to a certain level to prove that you understand what you're doing, not just more like a white paper submission and you want the VC to give you some funds. So for example, if you are a multiple time exit founder, it's easier to convince a VC that you've exited multiple times. They can know that, oh, this guy has done it in the market two or three times. So you might do it with an idea. That's why you find out that a lot of whites, the US guys, they raise money without having a product. Because why? These guys might have a lot of multiple experience in that US market, and it's easier for them to see a pathway for them to succeed in the market. But in Nigeria, most of us maybe who are in the Web3 space has not exited, new time founder. Now, the VC has also reached in the Nigerian market for maybe early 2017, 2018, 2019. They were giving free money. Cello probably was giving free 50K, 20K. A lot of people misused those funds. Now they've learned from it and they've kind of changed their strategy. They want to do it like a milestones base. Can you get the product to approve a state that proves that you even know the market target, you understand, you can create a little bit of traction to prove that you understand what you're trying to solve. The reason the VCs want this from a lot of people from the West Africa is that there's a lot of, will I call it like a white package fraud that has happened in this space. We might not want to say it publicly in the past few years. And a lot of VC talk about this around them circles, you know, and it has become probably like a checkmate for them to say, okay, do you know what? We're going to change our strategy. So if you can prove that, you can build, for example, I wanted to build a product in the energy sector, in the renewable energy sector. I said before I'm going to ask any VC for fund, because I have a lot of them as friends. Before I ask anyone for fund, I'm going to invest my fund. Yes, the product did not launch. I lost a lot of money in that project because I was the one financing it. And it failed not because of we were not ready to build. It failed because of technical negligence. A lot of technical failure made that project not launch. If I've gone to a VC to collect funds, I would have also been another bad investment for the
VC. Yeah, burnt their money.
Correct. So currently now I use my own fund. I hold no one, but we failed because I'm not a technical founder. My technical co-founder, we were not able to deliver technically on the dream of the project. And that's kind of slowed down. So I recommend that if before you go to VC, try to do something, especially when you've been in the market, earn some salary, have some savings, use your money, build. You know, try to just do something, then the VC will see you and be out there, talk to people. Like someone said, yeah, create relationship. Relationship is very, very important in getting money now. Like, trust me, you could sit down with someone. Like I was in Bangkok last year and, you know, I work with a lab and someone flew from Hong Kong to come and meet us. I think my boss just signed a check at the meeting there. Like it wasn't like just my boss just signed a check in the meeting because the relationship has been built for like maybe over a couple of months and the guy just signed the check without any kind of too much talk. So relationship is quite important right now to get the check. Thank you.
interesting. Builders and founders in the room, you know, it's a lot. It's all about your network. So that is also very important. Spend money going for events, seminars, hackathons and all of that just to create that relationship. Before I go to Dami, I want to speak to PJ. I think fundraising is something that came. I think I had a podcast recently with Paul of Dyer, and raising funds is something that really came seamlessly to them. Well, I mean, as that's from where I stand. So I want to just ask him, like, how are they able to do it? I mean, especially we have a lot of founders in the room that are also starting something. And so PJ, the playbook.
Thank you. Like, most of the other founders have already mentioned, being founders that have like a pedigree, maybe a second time founder or being very well network or connected is quite helpful to fundraising, right? For example, at Dyer, my co-founder Aleph was like basically one of the fathers of crypto in Africa. He was the founder of Bitcoins. So Bitcoins was doing crypto in 2018 and building like core crypto infrastructure before most people were even like touching crypto across the continent, right? Me and him work on like NGNT, which was like one of the earliest local stable coins in the market, even though that didn't go through, especially because of like the regulatory issues back then in 2020, 2021. So there is that. And after Bitcoins, he went to work for Circle as a principal product manager on the USDC payment team. We work together with team at Bitcoins. And after I left, I went to work for a mid-sized crypto venture fund. So like most of the VCs we were talking to or that invested in our pre-seed round, like VCs that we are already familiar with that have known our work and can vouch for us. So like that relationship was just so much easier to navigate. Also, especially if you're raising as an African founder, right? It really very, very helpful if you look really, really good on paper. Apart from like the product you're building, all of that. For example, both me and Aleph went to school in the US. We work for like US companies. We have stayed like in the US for a while and we have like the ability to just, oh, stand up and go and meet these VCs in person. For example, the person that led our pre-seed round, we met like the VC fund in person, and almost every single person in our round, we meet them in person. So like, if you don't have the ability to do that, then like, Memeka and others mentioned, you need to really spend a lot of effort actually building a relationship with these VCs, especially like for our lead, we have to do like a lot of market education, right? Because they have not invested in Africa. They acquired a large fund and they mostly don't do like pre-seed and seed most of the time. But for them, we're like a unique case, even though we have to do the market of education for them and what the opportunity is and what we are building at Dyer. And despite all of that, of us being like a second time founding team, I live working at like Circle, which is like one of the largest stable coin issuers in the world, and me working for a venture fund, it was still like a lot of work to actually go from, oh, we are raising, and then, but like you mentioned, we had it easier because we're successfully able to like go into the Alliance program, and then immediately after the Alliance program closed like a really good pre-seed round, even pre-product. So yes, but it's not as easy as it sounds because you do need skills to speak to like a lot of VCs. For example, there are a lot of VCs that I know and we had personal relationships with, but they just don't understand the African market or where the opportunity is going to come from or what the distribution will look like or how you win. And then they are like, oh yes, they like us, but like they'll wait when we have like more maturity or we have PFP, and then they can come back and do maybe the Series A or other rounds. So yeah, it's still like a lot of work that you probably have to start from day one. So if you're raising and you don't have that type of pedigree, you probably need to do like so much more work than we did, right? It will probably be almost impossible to like raise a pre-seed pre-product at the size of what we raise for our pre-seed without having like pedigrees like that. So yeah.
Interesting, interesting. Thank you so much, Paul. I think this kind of go with what Emeka was really stressing on. Guys, I think today we are having a lot of listeners tuning in on Binance. I'm seeing Nanaya and other people. I think we have over 600 people that have tuned in on Binance. So guys, if you're on Binance and you want to share something on what we are discussing, just leave it in the chat. And if you're also here on X, please, you can just leave it on the chat. And then, when we are halfway, when we are coming to an end, I'll just read all of that. Dami, I want to come to you. My question for you is about a pattern that, you have seen, especially, from local builders that are looking to raise fund. What pattern have you really seen that you think, has prevented them from successfully acquiring, those funds? And then also, sorry, I'm giving you too many questions, but also I also want to ask that, do you think global investors actually understand the African market, or you think they are just letting us repackage something for them just for the funding? Yeah, David, you can go.
Thanks, Chief. Your first question, right? I think people have said a lot. Emeka said a lot. Obina said a lot. And even PJ Tujo said a lot. And they're all correct, very honest. But answering your question specifically, what mistake have I seen? Like, I've seen this over and over again. The very common mistake is packaging whatever you are, not packaging, but like, building specifically for like Africa, or building specifically for like an African country, right? Because like, I've been opportunity to like, make intros to Coinbase Ventures team within Coinbase. I've been opportunity to make intros to like A16Z and these guys. And like, one thing they always tell me is, okay, so how big is the market? Right? And Africa has a lot of population. Like, we are a lot, 1.4 billion people, but our purchasing power is very low. And so when you look at the market size for like whatever you are building, it's always not to a local VC, it might make sense, but like to a global VC or a tier one VC, it doesn't always make sense, right? Because like the market size is too low for the kind of returns these guys want. So like the most common mistake I've seen is just building for limiting whatever you are building for giving yourself a geo limitation, right? So I'm building for Africa, I'm building for Nigeria. I think it's just important to, because this business also wants a return on their money. So it's important to like target as big a market as possible, right? Even though you have to start from somewhere, but like in your vision, in your storytelling, always impute it there that you're actually going for like a bigger market, and if possible, the whole globe, right? So I think, to just cut it short, that is like one of the most common mistakes I've seen from builders. And investors don't want to hear I'm building for Africa, to be honest. Like, because they know the African market is not as big, a market as, it's not attractive, right, to an investor. The second one, which is the one you mentioned, how can you repeat it again so I just get it and I'm not making a mistake?
No, I think it's just about, whether we are thinking that sometimes we just try to repackage things for the investors or the VCs. Yeah.
We are not, so they don't, these guys don't, to be honest, they don't understand the markets. That one is very, very, like, that is like the blunt truth. We did a program last year, I think towards October. We called this BFF, Base Founders Fellowship. And like, we brought three tier one VCs, four actually. So we brought in A16Z, and this was like the first time, these guys will like be talking to African founders in an African program. So we brought in A16Z, we brought in One Confirmation. One Confirmation is like one of the key investors in Poly Markets, right? We brought in Electric Capital, and then we also brought in Lava. Lava is like an African VC, so they understand the market, right? But we brought in these four, and then we introduced them to 20 of these African founders. And like, in all of the conversations, one thing was very clear.
apart from Lava, these other three didn't really understand the market. Even though before the whole program, we kind of like sat down with them. We explained the whole African markets to them. It was only Electric Capital that got it a little bit. And that was because they had invested in Onboard, which is owned by Yele. Like that is the only African portfolio company that they have. Right? So like most of them don't get it. They don't understand the markets. And it's not really their fault, right? You would only want to pay attention to something that seem attractive to you. So probably the only reason why they don't really understand the market is because they've not seen Africa attractive enough as a market. And like going back to Emeka's point, we've not had an exit, like a proper exit yet. In Web 2, the African tech space became very, very interesting when Stripe acquired Paystack, right? Like everywhere. Like it was a very shocking news and it sent waves across the ecosystem, right? And like from that time onwards, these global companies, global investors started looking into Africa because okay, for Stripe to acquire Paystack then there's something here, right? So we need that kind of moment in Web3 as well. We've not had it like properly yet. So probably when it happens, then it will bring more attention because we've seen it in India, to be honest. We've seen it in other regions, but we've not seen it in Africa yet. So they don't understand. Yeah. It's not their fault. We just need to actually just show something that will make the market attractive enough.
Absolutely. And yo, Dami, we want to give you a big shout out for the work you're doing at Base. I think, really, helping these guys, with funding and other things. So yeah, I mean, keep up the good work. I want to come to Emeka and, Obina. Briefly, if for instance, let's say we have people, I mean, which I know we have a lot of them. And oh, Zane, thank you so much for the tip. Really appreciate Zane. Thank you very much for the tip on Binance. Emeka and Obina. So let's say there are people that are building that are here and they are ready to raise. What would you tell them? Like, where do they go to? I mean, who should they, what is the actual action points? Because I know most people, they are like, they don't know who to communicate with. Like, how do they get to, which VCs should they get to? I mean, do we have some sort of, I don't want to use the word brokers, but yeah, something like that. Are there anything like that? You know, people want some actionable steps in acquisition of funds, some of these things. Emeka, I'll start with you and then Obina can go.
Okay, great. So let me just give a story. So when I started the project and I knew that Base was a growing community and I just wanted the project to be involved so we can get like proof of work or proof of traction within the community first. That was I reached out to Dami. I reached out to, you know, players in that space because you have to first, you know, start building and reaching out. I think that's the first thing, the responsibility of the founder. Raising fund is like a full-time job. You should have a roadmap. You should first have, oh, let me get involved. Then you get involved. People start seeing you. People start talking. People start referring you. That is the first place to start. Like, let's say you're building in Web3 space in Africa. You see communities like Base. You see communities like Solana, Ethereum. I say, like a founder in the Web3 space, that is the first place to start. Start with the community and start building that strong relationship with the people on ground so they can refer you. And because they would see it and in their conversation, it's part of their KPI. They would tell the people that, oh, these guys are really doing something good because you will become part of them winning in their job or in their responsibility because this is part of their KPI, finding those founders that could win the market for Base, for Solana, for Ethereum. So I recommend to founders, do not, except you're rich, you can build in hiding. But if you're not, you know, if you don't have that money to push your project to where you want it, start building with the community first. Do not expect, don't feel entitled. I feel a lot of founders feel entitled because I hear things like, oh, they are not giving us money. They are giving their people. They don't like, you know, like I hear this racist kind of feeling among these founders. I'm like, bro, yeah, if I make money being a Nigerian, my first target would be to invest in Nigerians, right? I won't be thinking about Indians or Pakistans or Arab to invest. So if I give, Europeans give Europeans money. Why are you angry about it? Yes, I can risk my money with Europeans. So I feel the first instinct for founders being entitled is that they will find out that they will get rejection. And when they get rejection, they start putting it and tagging it that they are being segmented. nobody's segmenting you. For me, I think everybody is looking for where they can articulate real value. Like Dami also stated, they don't really understand the market, and they are, some of them are not ready to come here. So they, and there are big markets for them in Europe, in Asia, in North America. So to them, they can also, like, let me give an example. For stablecoin products in Africa, do you think that since USDT is the major holdings for a lot of people in Africa, do you think that these guys can build a product in North America and target Nigerian users? I think they can do it with targeted ad, optimized ad, and they don't need Africans to build that for them. One of the biggest winners in USDT products in Nigeria, in Africa, was Yellow Card. Yellow Card is founded by USA guys. And at the end of the day, Luno is there. Luno is South Africa, I guess. And if you look at it properly, you'll find out that as a founder, your responsibility is to build and get rich. And the level of entitlement you feel, it's careless. So I recommend for every founder to drop any form of entitlement from, from another person's finance. So the first thing I recommend, I will state again, your first responsibility is go to communities that are that you can get involved so people could see you. Do not underrate that if Dami sees you, he can recommend you to the right people. Do not be waiting for Armstrong in USA or JC to be the one to see you. Start with Dami, build with him, be in that community. Start with Solana if you prefer Solana, if you prefer Ethereum. There are many communities like that. Find them, start there, and start building visibility. I'm sure when it gets to their program, like the one Base did last year, BFF, that they did in Kenya, I'm sure a lot of founders, got to win in that project, in that awesome community. There was this community also that was founded by this our great friend from Ethiopia. They do a lot of founder house in Kenya also. I can't remember the name now, it skipped my mind. But I think it's another good place to start. There is also Aya. You said something.
No, go on.
There's this Aya guys, who are from Ghana, were led by Eric from Ghana. I think he also has a founder house in Kenya. Maybe in Kilifi or something like that. I think those are places you can easily start. Those are places you can start, find community, find an early start. You might even be surprised. An African guy might just be in the community and say, okay, do you know what? I can quickly give you $5,000. You sign an agreement with him. He sees what you're doing. Or someone in that community can say, okay, I can give you $10,000 as seed capital, or angel investors. So I think once you're visible, once people take you serious, I think you can raise money even among the community. I think there are some folks in the community that has earned some money now. And I'm sure some of them are investing. I know a lot of people who have done like that. Me, I also have done it myself. So
yeah.
I think that's the best place to start. Thank you.
Big shout outs to Mr. Eric and Kwame at Aya. I think they are doing very, very well. Mr. Obina, you can go briefly, please.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So first things first. I recently had a conversation. And before I even go into that conversation, last year, I and my team built something that doesn't exist in this space, right? But it was not needed at this time. And all of that effort and energy is now pending, waiting for such a time that this will become the norm again, or we are able to change it into something else, right? And this is one mistake that many founders are making in Africa, not understanding the times that they are in. The second one is, recently, we came up with a solution of something that we are building, and after the team pitched it to me, the first thing I told them is, this thing won't fly. And this is the reason why it won't fly, and this is what you're going to do to make it fly. First of all, many Web3 builders are building Web3 products. They are not building solutions that are needed. The way we are supposed to be building in Web3 right now is we are not building Web3. We are building solutions that are using Web3 as the infrastructure, or rather blockchain is that infrastructure. And because of blockchain, it is more efficient than what is currently existing. This is the communication gap that we have been missing. And so we all come with the, you know, there's just this, I'm building a Web3. What do you mean you are building? Build a solution that human, the end user doesn't care about what the underlying infrastructure is. Even the investor is not investing in you because of the underlying infrastructure. The investor is investing in a solution that users are going to use. A solution that is scalable, that is solving real problems. That is what they are investing into, not the technology behind it. The technology behind it only makes it more effective and efficient. And we have largely missed this. So most of us that are building are always communicating wrongly. And we are building with the wrong mindset also. You need to also know where the industry is at now. I mean, there is really no VC that I know that would be very enthusiastic about your crypto exchange, no matter what you build into it. Because those are not hot things right now. So you need to know what the market needs, what the ecosystem needs. All right. And before you even approach VCs, Emeka has touched on it, right? He built with his own money first. Okay, say you don't have money. There are ecosystems that has grants. Base has grants. Solana has grants. Arbitrum has grants. Lisk has grants. Why don't you go and start with all of those? In fact, the fact that you are able to get a grant from any of these is a signal of experience to the later on investors who will come in. Most global investors right now will not come at your seed and pre-seed. They will come from your Series A, and your Series A is an indication that, one, there is now traction, there is market intelligence, that you can give them data information, there is users, there is revenue generation, you know. So all of these things are the things, the kind of knowledge that builders need right now, as they are building to make them investable. You know, another thing also to consider is, another thing to also consider is, the fact that you have to lead with the problem. All right. Live with the problem that is being solved. What are the solutions that Africa can connect with right now? What are the solutions that you can bring, that you can build, that can solve that real problem? Because these are what they are coming to invest into. All right. So yeah, these are just a few pointers that builders need to be looking into.
Thank you so much, Mr. Obinna. I mean, those were powerful.
Thank you so much for the insights, and I mean, it's very, very, very insightful to hear from great founders like all of you. I want to ask founders this question, right? You know, Africa, we have one of the, should I say, we have the most youthful population, very green, very tech savvy, internet penetration is very high, and so on and so forth. Do you guys see that as an asset? And also, if you do, do you use it to pitch outsiders or maybe foreign investors to look into the market and also your product? Do you use that as a bargaining chip, or do you use that as a pitching opportunity for investors to look at? And also, if you are talking to investors, which of these two do you place first? The product you are creating and the solution it is going to provide, or the community that you believe is around that particular project that you are building and that they believe in that project.
I think Seth can take, Seth is the founder, so yeah.
Can you take it again? I missed the second part of the question, Michael.
Okay, so the second question is, what do you place first when pitching to investors? Do you pitch the product and the solution or the community that you have already built around such products? I mean, one of the founders talked about building community, and before you even meet up with investors, you should make some headway. You should be at a certain point, then you can have some data to say, hey, we have this, we've done this, and yada, yada, yada. So which of these two is on top of the other, right? Is it the community that you have been able to build, a narrative you've been able to build around the product, or the solution that you are so much confident to build on?
Okay, so, and the first one, let me finish this one and you take the first one. So, because the question is quite broad. For me as the founder, I mean, for founders, we are interested in the product and the solution. But the VC is interested in the community that you've built. The reason being that those who don't have MVPs, they have different thinking. But we that we have products on the ground, we sometimes want to prove to them that we have working products that has potential demand. It has an addressable market. But then, before they will take action, they want to know which part of the addressable market have you tested your product with. I don't know if I'm still connected.
Yes, yes.
Okay. So they want to know which part of the addressable market you have been able to get, convince, believe in what you are building. So it is something that you determine as at the time and the type of investor you are meeting. Because we read about the investors, we read about them before we pitch to them. So when I meet you and you are product-oriented VC, or you are focused more on what's being built, I'll give you what is being built, and perhaps with us,
yeah. I think Seth has dropped. I don't know, Ekoriu, can you hear him?
No, I think he dropped.
Yeah, black man, go on. I think, guys, we're wrapping up, so yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I think, most of what has been going on is around the storytelling of how to raise. But I think we need to pivot more into the preparations and the fundamentals. So, I want to ask the VC scouts or the VCs or the founders, what exactly do these, you know, builders have to truly act to, have, especially, you know, these builders, most of them are either new in the game, or this is your first time going to kind of raise funds. So we are looking at things like what they should get, especially with their data room, their cap table, financials, their pitch deck, and even how they define and present the addressable market, the serviceable market, and all of these things. So, I mean, looking beyond this, the storytelling of how they should go about it, and pivoting more into these things that they have to, because it's a necessity. If you don't have it, no investor will actually throw money into you. So I think we can pivot the conversation more into that with our data room structure, the information, your pitch deck, your cap table, and all of those things. And then let's see how best we can be able to help them on that.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just going to read some few comments here. Black man again, as Kane said, are investors really found at conferences or events, especially in this part of the world? That's interesting. But yeah, obviously, I mean, well, I don't know what you guys think, but I personally believe that you can find investors at events and conferences. Yes, of course, you can find them there because they have interest there. L Urgent says, really battling with network. We'll come back to the recording. Okay. Jane said, the system is changing faster than ever. That's true. I agree. Creative Paul says, a career traction, I guess, is the word. Okay. Even though I didn't get that. Theofloss says, hope is risen. Hope is risen. Okay. And Sammy.Earth says, the interesting part is that Nigerians solved the store of value side faster than many expected. What still remains open is everyday utility. How digital value enters normal life without friction. That's where the next serious products will come from. Okay. Thank you very much, Sammy.Earth, on this. Guys, I think it's been very, very, very healthy, informative, and conversation. Like, we've really, really learned a lot of things. We just have like 3 minutes. I want to say a big thank you to all of our speakers. I want to say big guys, make sure you follow every speaker. Very important. These guys have all the connections, so make sure you do follow every speaker, and let's follow each other as well. That's what we do here. We don't come here to learn only. We come here to connect as well. Big thanks to Echo Real, who has been doing this with me. Big thanks to Emeka. I think he brought in a lot of information and light. Same as Mr. Obina. Really appreciate. Said Dodo is with Hopium. I see Ship BNB in there. The Roland, Celestine, and all of you. I'm joining through. I think Courtney Mukuye has also been here since the beginning. Big shout outs to you. And big shout outs to all of you on Binance that also tuned in. Today we actually had a lot of people tune in from Binance. We had that now we almost 1,000 people tune in, and that is very, very impressive. That is very, very impressive. So guys, we do this each and every, Sunday, 8 p.m. UTC. So make sure that you are always, tune in with us so that you can get to, get with, what's going on in the Web3 space, in Ghana, in Nigeria, in Kenya, and all the other places. Thank you so much. And, our WhatsApp community, the link is on the Jumbo. Make sure you join our WhatsApp community. Hey, Kwame, big shout outs to you for joining us. I think you came to close us. We've closed. Thank you very much, Paul from Daya. Thank you, Dami from Base as well. Yes, Aquario, I've seen all of that. So guys, thank you, and let's do this again next week. Same time, Sunday. Make sure you follow our WhatsApp, community, join our WhatsApp community, and, we are out.
As I live the back of my team, oh, I've got that feeling. Let me go and does she go back into my face? It's over. My baby is over. It's over. It's over. She didn't tell me to go back. Let me go and does she go back into my face? It's over. She didn't tell me to go back. It's over. It's over. My baby's over.
You see me pretty girl, why you doing me so? Although me pretty darling, I am falling, can't you see I'm not a bit ago? I never tell you no lie. Baby girl, why you doing me so? I'm out so far, but they have no time, I'm sorry, tell you go. You see me pretty girl, why you doing me so? Although me sweetie darling, I am falling, can't you see I'm a bit ago?